Good morning again. My name is Dominic and glad you're here today. We're in the second week of a series called Formed, talking about spiritual formation and how we grow. I was thinking about this topic of where we're headed today and thinking about a church that exists in the middle of the city of Amsterdam. This church, now that's not very strange. In Europe, there are a lot of church buildings, but there's something a little bit different about this particular church. This particular church that exists in the city of Amsterdam exists in the middle of the red light district. Now, if you're not sure what that is, don't Google it. You'll get the idea through the context of what I'm about to share. But what's fascinating about this church is it sits in this square in the middle of a district and part of a city and part of a continent and part of a world that desperately needs hope. We would, in our mission organization, new people who would come to the mission field, they would often, part of their training was we would take them to the corner of this square and just kind of take in this idea of what it would look like to be the church in the middle of the city. Could there be something that the church has to offer to a context in a place that is suffering through exploitation, slavery, degradation? Does the church have something to say? Does the message, the story about Jesus, does it have something to offer people? It's a powerful image when you think about it. It's a powerful image standing right there. I think of another European 80 years ago, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a pastor in Germany during Nazi regime, wrote this. He said, "The church does not exist. It does not stand on the boundaries. It does not stand on the outside and look in. The church exists in the middle of the village." That the place and the hope, as Bonhoeffer saw it, that the place of the story of Jesus is not kind of on the outside looking in, it's right in the middle of it, that somehow the church is a place of hope to the world. We're in this series, as I said, called Formed, and we're talking about spiritual formation. And this idea around spiritual formation, this definition, if you want a definition, is that spiritual formation is a process of intentionally opening our lives to the work of the Spirit to become more like Christ. That we would be people who are shaped into the people that God has created us to be. That we'd be people moving closer to Jesus. That we would be people also through that we would be people who stand in the middle of the village and have something to say to bring hope in the world. These next few weeks, which Mark started last week, which was also our Vision Sunday, if you didn't get a chance to hear that, you can go on our website and hear that sermon last week. But he started last week. We talked this week. Next week, we're going to carry on with a few other pieces. But this week today, we're going to talk about this idea of worldview and how you see the world. The lens through which I see the world, the lens through which you see the world shapes who you become. That how you see shapes who you become. And my hope today for you as we get to the end of where we're headed today is my hope for you that is that you would evaluate your worldview. That you would evaluate and look at the way that you see the world. That you would move your worldview. My hope is that you would hear the story of Jesus and hear this kind of worldview that the story of Jesus offers. And that you would say yes to that story. And by saying yes to that story, that you could be hope in the middle of the village. We're going to be in Acts chapter 17 today. In Acts chapter 17, the Apostle Paul goes to Athens, famous ancient Athens, and has something to say in the midst of a city that has a lot to say already. So as we go there, would you join with me in a word of prayer again, please? God, we've been reminded of truth. We've been reminded of your story. We've been reminded, even as Kathy led us in prayer, that the world doesn't work as it should as we face heartache. We've been reminded of all sorts of messages today. And we bring, with that, God, we bring all of our stories. We bring our readiness to hear today. We bring our disinterest to hear today. We bring our struggles into this place. We bring our joys and the good news that has happened into this place. God, as Kathy and Savannah have already led us this morning, that we would know individually here now that you welcome that you welcome our story, because you have something better to offer. That you are inviting us into a new kind of story. God, I pray for those who are in this place and have come in today bearing weights that they were never made to bear, of longings that are not fulfilled, of heartache that doesn't seem to heal. I pray especially for those people, God, that you would surround them with the new power of your Spirit. I pray, God, for all of us that we'd be ready to hear, that we would say yes to the story of Jesus, that we would be people who bring hope in the middle of the village. In Jesus' name, amen. Acts chapter 17, it's a fascinating book. If you haven't read Acts in a while, you should. It's telling the story of people who have seen Jesus, said yes to Jesus, and then they moved out into the world. This is what they did with the message and the story of Jesus. And in Acts chapter 17, beginning in verse 16, Paul is in Athens. He was somewhere else with Timothy and Silas, but persecution came and he had to leave. And so we read this in Acts 17, verses 16 through 18. While Paul was waiting for Timothy and Silas in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating for foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. So Paul is in Athens. A little bit about Athens is that Athens was a city filled with gods, they said. Athens had idols everywhere, and Paul's walking around as he's waiting for Timothy and Silas. You can kind of picture him kind of going like, well, what am I going to do? I guess I'll just walk through Athens for a while. And you can imagine him just kind of walking down these streets, and statue after statue, thing after thing, is telling Paul like, well, this is the god of this, and this is the god of that, and this is the god of this. And something in Paul starts to kind of get upset, or the original language of the word means like provoked. There's something in him that's like unsettled by this. And I love what Paul does. What Paul does is he doesn't just sit on that disturbance in his spirit. He goes and speaks to it. And so he goes to the places where people meet together. He starts first with the religious people. This was often a habit of his when he would go into new areas. He goes to the synagogue. He had a background in the synagogue as part of the Jewish community. And so he goes to the synagogue, and he has a platform there to speak. And he speaks to Jews, and he also speaks to God-fearing Gentiles, which are basically non-Jewish people who were interested in the faith, but they weren't really like fully committed. In other words, they weren't really sure about the whole circumcision things. But they like, no, well, you get your God thing. We might just want to watch for a bit before we go all the way in. And so Paul goes there and speaks to these spiritually interested people, these religious people, and he has a story to tell. And then I love that Paul goes to the marketplace, we're told. There's not like a great example probably or analogy of that here in our American culture, but you can imagine, again, whether Europe or other country, or other continents in the world where marketplaces still exist. It is a place where people gather. It is a place, yes, it is a place of a bit of commerce, but it's also the place where everything and everyone from outside comes and is in one place at one time. It is a place of, whether it's music or here, he has philosophers. And he gets some audience with these philosophers who are in the marketplace, in the meeting place. He speaks with Epicureans. Epicureans were philosophers from a couple hundred years prior to that started a couple hundred years prior to this. They were people who valued that the chief aim of life was all about pleasure. And they weren't not necessarily just complete hedonists, but like pleasure in the sense of avoiding pain. Like if we could avoid pain, that's the greatest thing we could do. Then he also talks with the Stoic philosophers. Stoic philosophers go, no, you guys are crazy. Life isn't about pleasure. Life is about virtue. And so he's talking to this other group of philosophers. This is a place where people are meeting. This is a place where people are exchanging some ideas. And Paul says, hey, I've got another story for you. And so in the meeting places, in the synagogue with the religious people, in the marketplace with the philosophers, Paul says, I have a story. A different kind of story. And we're told here from the writer of Acts that Paul's story is this, is that Paul's story is Jesus and the resurrection at the end of verse 18. That's Paul's story. In the midst of a city with all sorts of gods and all sorts of stories and all sorts of worldviews, Paul has a story that he thinks will form them into the people they were created to be. That is where he's spending his energy and his time. How do these philosophers respond to the Paul story? Well, they respond to say, you know what? We need to take you somewhere else because there's a whole lot of other people who are talking about these kind of things that you need to talk about, that we need to hear from you. And so their response is, let's go to a place called Mars Hill. You can see this in verse 19. And they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, which is Greek for Mars Hill, the hill of Mars, the god of war. And where they said to him, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean. And then the writer of Acts gives us a note for people like you and me who aren't living in ancient Athens, and he just tells us why they would say this. And he says, all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Mars Hill was a place, but it was also a council that kind of had oversight of the culture. It was a place that they oversaw people presenting ideas. And you could think of it this way, that Mars Hill was the council that oversaw the worldview. They were worldview curators. And they said to Paul, oh, you've got something to say. This is interesting. Can we hear about that? And so their response to Paul's message in the marketplace about Jesus and the resurrection is, this is something we need to know more about. And Paul has spoken in such a way that has begun to offer, I think, hope into their story. Now, before we go on, a little bit about worldview, because I've already said that word, and you probably want a good definition for it. So here's a very quick, easy definition for worldview. Worldview is the lens through which you see the world. It is not what you see, but is how you see it. All of us have a worldview. All of us have a way that we see the world. All of us have ways that we interpret experiences. All of us have a way that you read a book. All of us have a way that you view politics. All of us have a view, whatever, fill in the blank. You have a worldview. Everyone does. In fact, you probably don't even think so much about your worldview because it's something that's kind of deeply ingrained with us that probably almost, you can most readily see it when you're in places where your worldview clashes with someone else's worldview. So for example, if you've ever had an opportunity to travel to a different culture or a different country, you've been in a place where you go, oh, this is different than how I see things. I remember the first time I went to Uganda, and our team was waiting for a bus to arrive, and it arrived 2.5 hours later than it said it would arrive. No problem right there, but it was a little unsettling for me coming from a worldview where it's like, hey, if you're going to be somewhere, you get there on a certain time. But for them, it was a little bit different. Or think about politics. There are places and countries in this world where politics and the personal life of a politician is irrelevant to their public life. There are places in this world where that's not the case. You get into a conversation with someone and about politics in a certain places of the world, and they're like, why do you even care about what they did or who they divorced or who they're dating now? You get into places and cultures, and you can see that your worldview pushes up against someone else's worldview, and you realize, oh, something deep inside me has shaped me and formed me and brought me to the place where I am now. You have a worldview, I would say, about how you think about God. Even when I say the word God, you have certain images or ideas come in mind. You have an idea of how you read this Bible. You come at it from a certain perspective. There are certain things you would say yes to. There are certain things that you can think of certain teachers in your life who have spoken and led you in certain ways around this book. Whatever the topic is, you have a way to see the world. And here's what we want you to know today about worldview. Today's about worldview. The next few weeks are about a couple other things. Here's the one thing. If you fall asleep and think about nothing else, you can at least take this home and everyone will think you paid attention. Is that worldview forms you. Here's the thing I want you to know is that worldview forms you. We want you to know this. When you think about spiritual formation and you think about worldview, what we want you to know is that how you see the world forms you. It shapes who you are and it shapes who you are becoming. Your worldview forms you. You can see this all throughout your life. Here's this is probably a little bit of a silly example, but a few years ago, Hillary went on a trip. My wife Hillary went on a trip for the weekend, and she left during the daytime while I was still at work. And when I came home from work, I came home and opened our apartment where we were living at the time, and I opened the apartment door, and all throughout the apartment were sticky notes. And on every sticky note, as I got home on that Friday evening after a long week of work, every sticky note had a task on that sticky note. And that sticky note with the task on the sticky note was placed on the item in on which the task must transpire. And so I walked home into the door, and I came home to a room full of things to do on a Friday night. Now, I have a choice of how I choose to see that moment. And in fact, I happened to be preaching at the church we were part of at that time, and I was able to process this with them that weekend before Hillary got home. But I have a choice when I open that door and see all those sticky notes with all those tasks going on. I have a choice of how I see that moment. And I could see that moment as like, are you kidding me? I mean, doesn't Hillary know I was working all week long? She gets to go jump on a plane and go off for the weekend, and it's Friday. I'm tired. It's been a long week, and now I've got 20 things I need to do. That's one way to see that situation. And that seeing that situation that way will lead to something. And I will become a type of husband, and that relationship will go to a place where I probably don't want it to go. And the room got silent because you know where I'm going with this. I could choose to see that situation a little bit differently, like, hey, this is an opportunity to participate in the relationship. I'm part of the relationship. I'm part of taking care of our home. And so these are things that, yes, this is something I want to do. It's a bit of a silly example, but you see the point that how you see a situation shapes who you are, and guess what? It shapes what happens when she gets home. I can sit with bitterness all week long thinking she's given me things to do. She's bossy, she's this, or she's that. Or I can see myself as part of the relationship, and I'll be a different person when she's back. How you see the world, how you see the events that happen to you, how you see everything coming at you, how you see the people you're in relationship with, shape who you become. That's what we want you to know about worldview, is that worldview forms you. I think that's why Paul was so upset earlier on, walking through Athens. I don't think it was simply a theological thing, although I'm sure there was an element of that. I think he was upset because he knows that idols aren't neutral. He knows that idols aren't neutral. He knows that how people see the world, how you see the world, how I see the world isn't neutral. You can't just stand back and go, well, that's kind of interesting. No, how you and I see the world shapes who we are becoming. And I think that's why he went and spoke to it. I think that's why he went and is like, no. I got to say something about this because people are at stake. Because people are becoming a certain way and becoming certain types of people because of what they're seeing all around them in Athens. Idols aren't neutral. How you see the world shapes who you are becoming. And so Paul has a story to tell. And he tells this story here in Mars Hill to this council, to people listening. And I want to read through it. It's a little bit of a long passage, but you can hang with it because I want you to hear the full story and then we'll unpack it a bit. Here's what he says as he stands up, as they're ready to hear what his worldview is, of his, the way that Paul sees the world, the way that Paul has seen, believes how the world has been unfolding up until this point. Verse 22. Paul then stood in the meeting of Areopagus and said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship. I even found an altar to an inscription to an unknown god. But you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. And this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. And he does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by human design and skill. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising that man from the dead. That's Paul's story. That's what Paul wants them to hear. Paul tells them a story that he believes will form them into the type of people that God has created them to be. For Paul's story tells us a few things. And in fact, it starts to answer some of the ideas around worldview. When people think about worldview, they think about worldview answering some core questions about the human existence, some questions that you and I all have, like this, like who are we? Where are we? What's the problem? What's the solution? And his story starts to unfold this. That he tells us that, hey, as human beings, that we're made in the image of God, that we're created by God, that we're part of a world, a good world that God is moving towards renewal, that doesn't often work the way it should, but God is moving toward renewal. He talks about the problem. He talks about it this way, that somehow something in the human being, something needs to change, as he uses the word repent, to turn around, to go a new way. And then he offers the solution. He says the solution for that is in, I love how he didn't even say the name Jesus. He says the man that God raised from the dead, Jesus, that the solution for this is the person of Jesus, that his death and resurrection has brought a solution to the human problem. For Paul, this is the story. This is the central piece. And I love how Paul does it, that Paul uses their culture. He speaks from their worldview. He says, I've spent time walking through Athens. I see that you understand religion. You even have a god like that's there just to catch all the other gods that you may have missed. I get where you're going. That's easy to mock. But no. What I see in that is that you're searching for something. Paul quotes their poets and says, yeah, even there's a sense that the artists get it, that there's something spiritual going on. There's something going on. And what Paul does is he speaks from their worldview in a way that is for them. That the very thing you've been longing for, that the very thing you've been searching for, that I can speak to that. In fact, that's a story that has been going on long before you and I ever existed. Paul speaks to that, and he says that's the story of God and what he has done in the person of Jesus. The best thing that Paul sees for them, this is the best thing he wants to tell them, that he gets an audience in front of the people who cultivate and are curating a worldview in Athens, in ancient Athens, and what Paul wants to tell them, the best thing he could tell them, the best use of his time, is he says the story of God and Jesus has been happening, and it's a story for you. And I love even that image there that, like, yes, it seems like a little bit that as human beings, he tells him that, like, we've been kind of searching around, like searching in the dark. But here's the thing, God has never been that far. He's right there. Paul's inviting them, challenging them, calling them to make a change and to say yes to the story of Jesus. That for Paul, that somehow this would shape them in and lead them into the relationship that would shape them into be the people that God had created them to be. I know it's easy to read, especially if you're like me, you've been around church for a while, it's easy to read, well, of course, that's Paul. Like, what else is he going to do? Like, no. You got to imagine this moment. Imagine you are there. Imagine you're Paul, and you're going, like, you have an audience with the people who set the culture. What do you want to tell them? What Paul spends his energy is telling them is Jesus. But the best thing for them is Jesus. Or think of it this way. Put yourself in that audience. Put yourself on that council. Put yourself sitting around at this place in Athens. And here comes a guy, and you're like, all right, what's this guy have to say? Well, he spent his entire time allotted to him telling you that the best thing for you, has been the story of Jesus. And that story has been at work for you longer than you've ever imagined. And it's an invitation for you to say yes. So Paul gives them the space. And for some of them, for all of them, they hear this. They hear the call. They hear the invitation. For some of them, they reject it. He's in verse 32, when they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered. But others, they're like, hang on, this is interesting. We want to hear you again on this subject. Verse 33, at that Paul left the council, but some of the people, a third group of people, became followers of Paul and believed. And among them was Dionysus, a member of the Areopagus, and a woman named Demarius, and a number of others. So there were some who said, nah, Paul, you're crazy. There were others who said, this is interesting. I want to hear a bit more. And there were others who said, no, this is it. Like, this is the story that we've been searching for. This is what Paul wanted to tell them. This was the best thing for them. This is my hope for you, that you would hear and say yes to the story of Jesus. As theologians come along in the later years, they begin to build framework around the story of Jesus, and they build framework around a Jesus-centric worldview. And some of the elements that are part of this Jesus-centric worldview are this, like creation and fall, redemption and restoration. That's kind of the framework they place around this. And you can even see this again in some of what Paul is saying here on Mars Hill. He talks about a God creating the world. He talks about people that somehow along the way things got off track and people have longed and searched for God. He talks about redemption, that God has done something through the person of Jesus and raising him from the dead. And he talks about a day when God, as he puts it, will judge, when God will move the world towards its renewal. This is what Paul is doing in offering a new type of worldview. My hope for you out of this morning is that you would evaluate your worldview. That you would take a look and honestly ask yourself, like, how do I see this world? How do I answer those questions from earlier of who am I, where am I, what's the problem, what's the solution? I'd want you to ask yourself of where you are in this story. Like, if you were there, if you were listening to Paul, if you just like woke up on a Saturday and it's like, oh, I guess I'll go over to Mars Hill and hear whatever the latest lecturer comes and says, and if you're sitting there and you're going, this is interesting, like, what's your response to that? Maybe in your family, maybe over lunch, maybe in your small group later this week, you could honestly answer that question. Maybe for some of you in this room today, you're like, yes, I mean, that's me. That's me. I'm saying yes to this. I'm part of that. I'm signed on to that. I want more of this. I want to live more fully from this worldview. Maybe some of you are like that second group. And you're like, I don't know. Like, someone dragged me here today. Maybe I'm still working that out. Maybe some of you are like, this is ridiculous. But to go there means that you ask that question of yourself. I think if nothing else today, I want you to ask that question of yourself of where are you in that story? How would you respond at the end of this story? Paul's great thing, the best thing he wanted for the people of Athens is for them to say yes to Jesus. That's the best thing I want from you. That's my agenda, is that you would say yes to Jesus. I think it's the best thing. I think it forms you and shapes you into the person that God has created you to be. Where are you in that story? One Bible commentator put it this way, that the first step into the Christian life, the first step living a Jesus-centric life, is simply giving Jesus a chance to be heard. Maybe that's easy for some of us in this room. Maybe that's a bit more difficult. Maybe life has twisted and turned you around and you're like, I'm not listening to him anymore. If that's you, I would invite you to consider again. The story has been working. God has been moving toward you longer than you've ever imagined. Maybe you're here wondering, like, well, is Jesus even interested? Is this even part of the story? And I hope you hear yourself as one hearing Paul sitting in Athens going, yes, yes, this has been happening, even in your searching, even in your going like, I've tried this, I've tried this, I've tried this unknown God and this unknown God and this unknown God. And someone comes along and says, yes, okay, those were all pieces leading to this moment where I can tell you fully what's been going on behind the scenes. It's Jesus. Maybe you're not interested in this at all today. And my hope for you, maybe the best thing for you today is that you would just be willing to give Jesus a chance to be heard. Wherever you are in this story, my hope for you is that you would hear the story of Jesus. You're carrying a worldview. You see the world through a certain way. You see God through a certain way. And how you see the world, your worldview shapes who you are becoming. And I think the best thing for you to do, the best thing for you to say yes to, is the worldview, the story of Jesus for you. I want to pray for us and pray for you and your journey, pray for me and my journey. And we're going to close with some declarations of faith that that as we sing them, they may be something you're ready to say yes to. They may be something you need to hear over you. But if nothing else, that you would give Jesus a chance to be heard, because I believe he wants to say something to you here today. God, we're grateful that your story has been at work longer than we could imagine, longer than we deserve, certainly. It's a story that forms us and shapes us in all sorts of ways. Thank you for Paul, that in the midst of his disturbance, he just didn't sit on that, but he went and spoke about it, that he offered a different kind of story. I pray for each of us in this room that we would bring whatever story we've brought in here today and put it before you, that we would be willing even today to exchange our story for your story, that we would say, you know what, we're done living that, we're done living from that perspective, we repent and we turn a different direction, and we say yes to your invitation. God, give us the courage. Pray for those that their next step right now may just be the courage to listen to you. Give us that courage. God, speak these words of truth that we're going to sing and say together. Would you speak them over our spirit? Would you form our minds even in ways that maybe we're not there yet, or maybe we need to declare loudly because we are there and need to plant our foot in the ground there, but that we would be willing to say yes, whatever that yes is now. Thank you that you are a God of grace who is not afraid of our stories. In the midst of our searching and longing, in the midst of all of our unknown gods, you say, here it is. His name is Jesus. We say yes to you today.